Hello and welcome to The Deep Dive. I'm Alex.
And I'm Joe.
And we're the founders of award-winning marketing agency, Campfire. This is our new podcast that's designed to take a deep dive into social media and more specifically, the psychology behind the way we act online. This is the final episode of our first season. To round it off, we're going to leave you with a thought piece that should help you see where the future lies with social.
Alex and I are going to be discussing why some social media apps become unpopular or die out. Let's face it, Facebook just isn't what it used to be. And other apps offering different creative avenues have opened up and taken the spotlight. But why does this happen? And how can we as marketeers stay ahead of the curve and put ourselves in the best position to predict why and when an audience might migrate to a new platform? So first of all, I thought it would be worth opening this discussion with bringing up a few social media apps that have already been and gone that have had their time in the spotlight and have sadly disappeared. What are some of the social media apps that you can remember that that's happened to?
MySpace was a massive one. Bebo was a massive one, especially in school.
Did you have a Bebo account?
I didn't partake in Bebo, but I know that it was very popular.
Mm, it was very popular. Can you think of any others?
Does BBM count as a social network? BlackBerry Messenger?
I will allow BlackBerry Messenger. I think one of the biggest ones in recent times as well would have been Vine. That had a massive user base, almost as well, like, almost like a cult following. A lot of people started their creator careers on that platform.
I feel like that's a unique case, though, in terms of that didn't die because of popularity or poor user experience. That simply died because of a failure of the team at Vine to monetize the platform effectively.
So that's an interesting point, because I do also want to talk about MySpace, why that failed, Bebo, why that failed. But more specifically, I think Vine, like you say, is an interesting one, because you're right, it was, you know, it was continuing to grow. It seemed like they were doing all the right things. And then all of a sudden it was announced it was stopping and everyone was a little bit confused as to why. And I think you're right, when you look at it, you know, the team failed to monetize it properly. In your opinion, do you think that if they had more time, there was a route to be able to save it? Do you think there was a route that they could have monetized the audience?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think that's where potentially ByteDance, and when they took over Musical.ly, saw the appetite for short form content. And I think that they knew or had figured out a model. This is speculation, but potentially before they'd even acquired Musical.ly and seen that Vine had died and failed to monetize, and potentially saw Musical.ly as a way of harnessing short form content and the attention that it was having, and figured out a way to monetize it really effectively. And TikTok now have some really attractive packages for advertisers, for agencies and brands to utilize the platform and the attention that's on the platform. And have definitely succeeded where Vine didn't.
That's interesting. So again, and another question from me as well is, you know, I think you touched on there about TikTok and how they've successfully, it looks like now anyway, successfully got a large audience there and now managed to monetize it in quite a successful way as well, even with some very unique, very specialist, very new as well, never done before sort of ad packages and ad placements. Would you agree then that one of the biggest reasons why apps die or fail to get to long-term success is failure to manage a balancing act between almost whether an app is still cool and where everyone is and whether it's fun to use and consume content on, and also the business's need to generate revenue and pressure from investors for on that level?
Yeah, I'd read that was one of the key points of feedback for MySpace, is that because it was the revenue that it generated was based around ads on the platform, that they were pressured to include more ads on site, and they included so many that it made the app uncool and it felt like they were being intruded on a space that the users had built up over time. And that was famously something that Mark Zuckerberg was very against initially, adding ads to the platform, because he'd quoted as it being, it would make the platform less cool, which that's obviously flipped completely on its head now. I think people have become more accepting of the advertising model as a way for platforms to generate revenue. I don't think people are as annoyed by ads as they used to be. But I think, say, 10 years ago, having a platform that was too heavily advertised on was something that caused people to delete it or stop using it.
So just for some context for everyone there as well, I want to sort of paint a picture about why, you know, if we mention MySpace or Bebo now, there will be I imagine an audience of people who are listening to us that know what happened there and understand what happened. There might also be a group that don't. So just for some context, MySpace was almost the original, I guess you could say to a point, the original social media platform, right? So back in, early 2000s, MySpace was where a lot of people were spending their time online. They'd go on there, make profiles, make friends, and you know, basically everything else that comes with the basics of a modern social media platform. And it all seemed to start to unravel around 2005 and 2006. And it was during a time where MySpace had just been acquired by News Corporation in July of 2005 for $580 million. And it seemed that that singular point was where the sort of beginning of the end was for that platform, because it was around a similar time, you know, shortly after Facebook had really launched and was immediately pushing to go to different schools, different territories, and saw how quickly they were growing. And it was almost News Corporation's reaction to this level of competition that caused the demise, because Facebook, like you said, Facebook's approach was to continue to grow, to pour more money in through investment, to continue to go to different territories, to make the platform as fun and as user-friendly as possible. MySpace, from their new owners, were instructed to essentially try and generate as much revenue as possible. There was a lot more ads on the platform. That became apparent very quickly, if you remember back then, and it became less and less fun, you know, almost immediately. And what happened was, you know, that sort of game of, you know, trying to get this balance right and often making a lot of mistakes for MySpace, that took maybe like 4 years until the battle was essentially over. You fast forward to, you know, 2009, Facebook were then over 400 million users, and MySpace, who in 2005 had 100 million, was still sitting on around 100 million and didn't really see growth over that period. And that was also the time where apps like Twitter had launched and started to see scale, and by 2009 were on like 60 million users and things like that. So just a bit of context there on sort of why MySpace is such an important thing, just because it really was almost the first social platform, but then very quickly died. And for a lot of people now who use social, a lot of people might not even have used or remember what MySpace is. So I just wanted to give some context on that. What are your thoughts on Bebo? Because Bebo was also a very, very early on social media platform, sort of followed a little bit of a similar route to MySpace. Were you a user of Bebo?
I wasn't. I remember people saying, send me love on Bebo, though.
Yeah.
I remember that being a thing that you could do. Yeah. And it was like, could you like collect love, or like, was it like a score-based system? I don't know. But what I was going to say, following on from your point, is if you think about Facebook now, you essentially, if you don't have a Facebook, you can't do a lot of things. You can't use specific websites, and sometimes you can't log into specific applications. You need to sign up via Facebook because it's got a lot of your personal data associated with it. Facebook's kind of tied itself into the way that you live really nicely. And even when it was first starting to be used, even small things like it telling people who you were in a relationship with had an effect on whether or not you would have a Facebook. So if you had a girlfriend that had Facebook and said, why aren't you listing me as your girlfriend on Facebook?
Mm.
You were almost pressured by like a societal pressure.
Sounds like you've had that conversation.
No, but you know what I mean? Like you were pressured into downloading Facebook just so that you could display the fact that you had a girlfriend.
Sure.
So it almost had a function in real life. Mm. Like there was a real life pressure to have a profile on the platform. So it offered value in a sense. And I was just going to ask you, do you think MySpace and Bebo offered that to people? Do you think that's why Facebook had some leverage over those platforms? Do you think Facebook had more weight to it in social circles?
Yeah, no, I think there's a few things, in my opinion anyway, I think there's a few things at play that affect the balancing act of whether you can keep a social platform alive. So I think, you know, thinking back to where Facebook started, Facebook was very, very similar to Bebo, you know, when you know, in the first iteration of Facebook. And I think they saw what happened there and went, okay, we'll take that. We know that works. That's great. And then what they realized was, you know, if we want to win, we have to add more features that will maybe add, maybe they didn't think about it in this way, but better features that increases the user experience, makes it better, makes it richer, which might have been this, you know, thing that led to societal pressures to make it more of a thing that you have in your day-to-day life. And I think that's part of, you know, we can draw comparisons to today when new features are incredibly strong for user experience. You'll now, like, platforms have realized that if they start to lag behind on the user experience of their features, they will start to lose. And so, you know, Snapchat got stories out, and that was an amazing success story for Snapchat. Instagram stole it, and then for a short period over 2018 and 19, their user base started to decline. It's only in, you know, the past year that Snapchat's users have started to go up again. But for a period, you know, Snapchat was suffering big time because Instagram had taken their lead feature and made their user experience better than any other platform that offered that. And so I think what happened back, you know, way back then when Facebook was up and, you know, getting up and running and had taken that sort of initial blueprint from Bebo, I think they knew they knew it worked, and then they decided to develop on that to create a richer user experience. And I think it was then up to Bebo to, and, you know, MySpace alike, it was up to them to either, you know, compete and do the right thing for the overall for the business, which would have been increase the user experience and try and continue with this balancing act of is it good for the user and is it good for the business? And I think instead, and wrongly, their response was, let's try and make as much money as possible to try and fix these problems. Or, you know, what, in whichever way that that decision came about, that's the route that they went down. They increased the number of ads on the platforms. The strategy, especially for Bebo, from when they got acquired by AOL, their strategy changed big time, and eventually just sort of ruined the user experience. And so, you know, naturally, when the user experience is terrible, the users are going to go away. So,
and just following on from that point about user experience, Snapchat, as you mentioned before, recently did an update that completely overhauled their user experience, and Kylie Jenner tweeted that Snapchat was dead. And after that tweet, they lost $1.2 billion off of their market valuation just from that one single tweet. Because that opinion that Kylie so openly expressed on Twitter was assumed to be the opinion of a lot of other millennials. So when investors saw that, they all immediately pulled out. So
tell me if you're wrong, but I think the point you're trying to get at there is, you know, we talked earlier about how having, you know, for example, having a Facebook account almost became their societal thing. You know, you almost needed it, otherwise you were weird. You know, socials become so interwoven with daily life now. You know, starting from that point from Facebook, you know, years back, it's become so interwoven with our lives now that someone who's popular in the world, someone who's got influence, can give one opinion on a platform. And, you know, it affects everyone's sort of use on it, and it affects the market value on it. And, you know, even still, you know, she used a social platform to make that statement. Granted, it was Twitter, but, you know, it's so interwoven now that I think it's definitely, I think another point to make there is that it's definitely much harder now to start a social platform if you're going to. I think 2005 and 2006 and 7, when those battles were going on between those early platforms, you know, they were very, very basic platforms. And I think, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, how new platforms are born, and how I still do believe that there will be new platforms in the future. But I do think it's definitely much harder now than it used to be to get something like that off the ground and growing.
Facebook over the last few years have seen a consistent decline in the number of users under 25. Do you think we're seeing history repeat itself in terms of MySpace, Bebo and platforms before those with Facebook?
Yes, 100%. And I think the reason for that is, you know, the point we made earlier, you know, what Facebook did right all those years ago when they were fighting against Bebo and MySpace was focus on user experience. And they, when they started to win, Bebo and MySpace then made a series of mistakes that eventually led them to crash and die. What's happening with Facebook right now is, you know, they, you know, over the last 5 years, arguably the first 3 years of that 5 year period, they were still growing like crazy in every sort of department. And part of their strategy in doing that was, you know, content was shared everywhere, all forms of content, you know, everyone was seeing all sorts of content on the feeds. And similarly, you know, businesses were attracted there because they had really low costing ads, right? And that caused them to grow. You know, if things are really attractive, you're getting served all this content and it's super cheap for businesses to advertise on there, this, that, and the other, everyone flooded there. Fantastic. What they haven't managed to do particularly well is make sure that the platform is still attractive and is still good, strong user experience, and that the content that users are seeing in that age bracket that that you mentioned there, under 25s, is what they want to be seeing. And I think that's the problem. You know, the user experience for that bracket isn't being, you know, they're not meeting the expectations of that age bracket. I think the you know, people are going on there to hopefully see content from publishers that they like, or maybe the friends and family, or, you know, influencers that they like. And they're not being met with that because they're being met with a complete, you know, clutter of content from everywhere, maybe even from pages that they've liked in years gone by and everything else that's going on. The content that they're being served is not meeting their expectations of a strong user experience. And that's why it's decreasing. And I think that's Facebook's biggest challenge at this point for that age bracket is, how do we get that user experience as good as it was for when we, you know, us, you know, me and you, we were first on Facebook. You know, how do we get that for that age bracket? And I feel for Facebook, that's their biggest challenge right now. From a business perspective, it looks like they're doing amazing. You know, they did, what, $69 billion in revenue last year? Incredibly profitable. Great. So from that perspective, they've done an amazing job. But their challenge now is, you know, if they want that to continue, they've got to make sure that the next generation of people that they'll be monetizing are actually going to be on the platform to be able to monetize. And the only way that they can do that is to make sure that the user experience for those people and for that age bracket is prioritized. And right now, it doesn't feel like they're doing it, and it doesn't feel like they're doing a particularly good job or much to solve it. And I think if they don't try and solve it soon, they're going to have a serious problem.
So with Facebook, I feel like whilst I'm sure that they're tackling those issues internally, if you look at the investments that they're making and where they're spending their time, they're investing in platforms like the Oculus. So they're investing in virtual reality. And they've recently released what is arguably the most affordable and effective virtual reality headset in the Quest. Mark Zuckerberg also teased the kind of Minecraft style, very beta virtual world, where the idea was there was like a virtual Facebook. So if you're thinking about like what's going to be more stimulating, like is it going to be sitting on TikTok for 40 minutes, or could it be immersing yourself in a virtual world where you can do essentially whatever you want with your friends? Like Facebook could be trying to work on like a huge evolution in the platform that kind of leaves every other platform in the dust in terms of the amount of stimulation that it's going to give you as a user.
Exactly. So, sorry, just to jump in, that is a very good point as well, because what I don't want anyone to forget is that Facebook still owns Instagram, which is actually a very, very, very strong user experience for that demographic that they are leaving out on the Facebook platform. Especially now, you know, they've when they stole Stories, they've recently introduced Reels, which is, you know, direct competitor of TikTok. They are doing a good job there of maintaining that attention. And so maybe you're right, maybe either Facebook's there to you know, tend to the older demographic who maybe are comfortable with that, and there's other stuff coming, or like you say, maybe Facebook, do you think Facebook's maybe got this plan for Facebook to then do this giant leap? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think if you look at trends like Battle Royale games, so if you look at Battle Royale games, if you look at like user behavior on that, it's people working together towards like a common goal, like playing Fortnite. It's a groups of kids. There's streamers that are making a fortune doing that. And when Facebook presented that game, or Mark presented that kind of game world, that was some cross between virtual reality, a game world, Minecraft, Fortnite, social network. That's something where I can see younger users once again being captured by that idea and signing up to Facebook. I can't imagine anyone sort of around the age of 18 or younger signing up to a Facebook account now, because it just doesn't feel like that's the right platform for them, unless they maybe were part of a Facebook group as part of a university or something like that. But I don't see it as a place where they would get their news from friends. I would see that as more of like an Instagram, maybe a Twitter. But I think if they were going to do something that would reignite the interest of younger users, that would be it.
I agree. And just before we move on to the next topic that I want to get into, which is about where we think social's going to go, just something to pull out of here. There seems to be a couple of themes that have continually cropped up when we've been talking through these topics. And I just want to see whether you would agree with this sort of summary as to maybe why, what makes a platform take a tiny leap ahead or like a success, see success, and also why platforms die. I think what has cropped up is, you know, we talk about Facebook with its early battle with MySpace and Bebo. The reason why they won was because they focused on user experience, and MySpace and Bebo had, you know, a confusion of strategy, maybe focused on, especially MySpace, focused on ad revenue too much, and that caused the death of it. With that said, would you deem it fair to say that an app would die when it doesn't get the balance right between two key areas, which is the user experience, which is driven by design and the features and the new features that are put on there, and then the business side of that social platform, which is allowing it to stay alive, and one, whether a board will believe in the app enough to keep funding it, you know, similar in the case of Vine, or whether, whether a business tries to go too heavy on the ads platform and ends up ruining that experience. So again, to summarize, would you agree that an app maybe dies from poor, not getting the balance right between user experience and a business model?
Yes.
I know that puts it simply, but
no, yeah, I think that is true, because I think if a platform stops offering any value additional to value that they can get from a similar app that offers that value with an easier to access user experience and easier to navigate user experience, like for example, when Facebook tried to buy Snapchat because the stories feature was so successful and the user experience was so successful, and they said no, then they just released the stories feature on Instagram. They just built it themselves. And then I think we started to see that decline in users because people could get the same kind of experience from Instagram almost more easily than they could do with Snapchat, because it was already there in a platform and accessible in a platform that they were already using quite consistently. So they had no real reason to go back to an open Snapchat, especially when you couple that with its increase in popularity. So it wasn't just that Instagram released their own stories feature, it's that your friends all started using it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, why would you use Snapchat? What benefit do you have over...
Especially when that was their key leading feature that was used for. When somewhere that's already popular for other features then adds another feature to it, and like I said before, increases how strong that user experience is.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're absolutely right. You're never
and then we saw a slight resurgence in user base because Snapchat introduced something of value, which was like a new host of advanced AR filters that could make you like a girl, make you look old, make you look bald, et cetera, et cetera. But then there was value that you could get from Snapchat that you couldn't get in Instagram. And then the kind of AR filter battleground happened, and I think user base is probably starting to level out again in terms of number of users. But I think it's about user experience, the value people can get out of the apps, and then whether or not a investor believed in the app enough to continue to fund it.
To not make poor decisions on that, yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously we've talked a bit about you know, the battle that the different platforms have had over the years and how they've managed to continually stay on top for the ones that did, was largely through introducing new features that put the user experience ahead of their competitors. So with that in mind, what behaviors do you see social media apps adopting and why? And I think to give a bit of context to that question, obviously we've recently seen changes on Instagram, things like making the like numbers smaller. Some users can't even, some users can't even see the total number of likes. And, you know, a lot of that seemed to be down to a responsibility on the platform's part on mental health or even, you know, why what things are being prioritized on the platform, arguably wrongly. But then on the flip side, there has also been recent changes to the UI that has introduced, again, new features, specifically on Instagram. So you'll probably notice in the past month that on Instagram, where your notifications button used to be, there is now a shop feature. And in the middle, where there used to be, you know, a new piece of content, there is now the Reels feature. Maybe just to try and take advantage of your, you know, muscle memory and get them to have a look at these features. But still, those are new features that are leaning towards new developments, such as e-commerce, such as another form of content to be able to consume on the platform and challenging TikTok. So I think the question there is, what behaviors do you think you'll see in regards to those two aspects? And also, do you think that social platforms have a responsibility over mental health? Or do you think they're doing that because they feel like they have to, and rather they're going to keep pushing on with things that maybe matter to them more from their perspective, which might be these new shopping features or these new ways to consume content? What are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of the problems around mental health stem from the platforms all having a financial incentive to get you hooked on whatever it is, whether it's getting more likes on a post, achieving a certain milestone. And the reason that we get hooked is simply because human beings are driven towards specific goals. Like, if you can see a goal that is desirable to you, the only reason we survive is because you want to get to that goal. You're incentivized by your own brain to meet a goal for the purpose of survival, or what feels like survival nowadays. But it's not just social media platforms that do it. Games do it. Call of Duty does it. Fortnite does it. So I don't think that platforms will ever stop giving you some sort of level to attain, like a certain number of followers or a certain number of likes on a post. I feel like they'll always show you that so that you continue to try and attain at that level of success, I guess.
So that the business can continue to make money from it.
So that the business continues to make money. I think a lot of the attempts to make the numbers smaller might just be sort
of virtue signaling, almost.
Yeah, like a small cosmetic change to show people that they're doing something.
Yeah.
But they're not quite solving the problem.
Not quite committing, but doing just enough, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think that it'll change into, I don't think that'll ever go away. I don't think the numbers game will ever go away completely, or it'll reappear in different forms.
Okay. And then the other point was, obviously all of those points, all of those changes were made, and I just wanted to see what your opinion was on that in relation to, you know, the social apps' responsibility to mental health, especially with everything that's gone on in recent times and the discussions around that. But I think, you know, the other side of that was, you know, the theme that we've seen over the past, you know, almost a decade, over a decade now, almost two decades, is the continuation of adding new features that enrich the user experience is what tends to lead a platform to success, providing they don't tip the balance between their business model and that user experience, right? So, you know, if you think about what Instagram was when it first came out, it was a feed, a chronological feed of photos, end of. You logged on, You uploaded your photo, you saw how many likes you got, your friends would tell you, yeah, it's a nice photo, and you close the app again, and that was it. Compare that to now, where there's DMs, there's Reels, there's a shop, there's stories, there's videos, there's carousels, there's ads on the platform now as well. Like, there is so many different features on there. That is a massive leap from where that originally started. And they've been continually added over time. Where do you think these platforms are headed to? You know, they've just now added the shop feature and the Reels feature in the platform over the past month. And, you know, if it goes their way, these will likely become very integrated in, with the way we use the platform. What do you think their goal is? Where are they going? What are they trying to achieve?
I think that idea of the virtual world that we spoke about isn't a crazy idea. If you think about, people might say, oh, I'll never spend time in like a virtual, like social media world. But actually, if you check your screen time on Instagram, what are you doing then? Mm. You already have a virtual tertiary self on Instagram that's not real, by the way, that you've kind of designed like you would a game character almost, mm-hmm. with people building their avatar up almost to be this perfect version of themselves. So that's already a thing. So I don't agree with anyone who would say that they wouldn't spend time in like a virtual world, because you already do to a point. Mm.
These arguably could be the same people that, you know, 10 years ago would say, I'd never buy anything through something I'd just upload pictures to.
Yeah, yeah.
However, Instagram's here now, and it's just released the marketplace. So,
yeah,
know, we're there now. So, yeah, I definitely agree. I think all it takes for that for those things to change is time and familiarity. You know, I think that's why these changes come slowly, because you can't do, you know, the world of changes overnight. They probably had these ideas years ago.
Yeah, but imagine doing that, like, everyone thinking like, about what's just happened. Imagine like when we were playing like Snake on a right. Nokia 3210 or whatever, and then thinking about purchasing a product through that phone that you'd seen on an influencer post. Like none of this language existed, none of this like...
To then put it into your games console, to put on your VR glasses and then live in this world. It was like
it feels alien and far away, but it's probably 10 years or something along that kind of timeline.
So with that in mind then, you know, what you mentioned earlier about maybe Facebook is the platform that, you know, that group of companies, Facebook is maybe holding to one side and maybe developing a lot of different things for that big giant leap forward. Maybe with Oculus that it's got, with its VR capabilities and this digital virtual world that it might want to immerse you in, because it is developing in those areas anyway. Firstly, do you think that's what the world will look like in maybe 10, 15 years time? And if so, what will social media look like in that? What will we be consuming? What will ads look like in that world?
So I think that it would be very similar to what you experience now. So I think there would be stores that you can go to, and there might be like virtual skins like you get in games, because like you're in the same way that you, I know that there's people out there that buy clothes and send them back just to show that they're wearing something on their Instagram feed. So they're essentially buying like a virtual outfit basically that's not really theirs. Do you know what I mean? Like that outfit only exists in their digital version of themselves and they don't actually own it. So there might be things like virtual stores, skins for your little avatar. There will be places where you can build things with friends that you can share with other friends. You can make like a little world for yourself. And I think in terms of ads, it would still track all of your behavior within that virtual world. So it would track your purchases and be able to serve you ads in ways that you'd never seen before that would really get your attention. Like it could be, because it's virtual reality, it could be anything. Like Travis Scott did one of the first virtual gigs within Fortnite and there was virtual people there enjoying the gig. There was real life merchandise that came out of a virtual gig. So I think VR and AR has a lot more power than people maybe realize, and that Facebook are likely going to be the ones to do it first. They've invested very heavily into a lot of that technology. And when we're talking about the death of apps, Facebook, the lifespan of Facebook right now, Facebook the platform, not Facebook the group, isn't looking great, but in terms of younger users. But if they could do something like that, engage users with something that's incredibly engaging and stimulating, they've got a good chance of keeping going.
I completely agree. And I don't think it's too far away. I really don't. And it might sound far-fetched us speaking about it now, but to link this back to a previous episode, you know, when we were talking about social ads versus TV and billboards, all of a sudden, all of those things become massively relevant again because everything's tracked. You know, you could be, you know, virtually experiencing a world that has been built around you for the way that you like it. And that means that, you know, you might be coexisting with other people who want to enjoy this world with you and have had it, you know, designed their way as well. And if you walk past a billboard, you know, it's designed to you. So you'll see one billboard where that space is. Someone else will see another one. And because everything's virtual, it means everything can be tracked. And so if you look at it and you look at that billboard for 2 seconds or three or four, that virtual world will know it. And so what we're seeing, it's almost as though what we're actually seeing on social media platforms is this like weird 2D predecessor to what will eventually be, if that makes sense. And this is like quite abstract and futuristic, but that's what it feels like to me anyway, where these different platforms are used for different use cases right now anyway. What it feels like to me is that over the next 10 to 20 years, there will be this battle for which platform will be the one that creates not just a virtual world that you can look at through a screen, but a virtual world that you can look at through your own eyes, that you can experience fully, that will give that immersive experience, that will win on this, you know, this ad front as well, where it's not just 2D content anymore. It's everything that you experience in real life. And it will also be tracked and used in ways to get you to purchase things. And that's the world that we're almost headed for with the way that technology is progressing. I don't think there's, in my opinion anyway, I don't think there's two ways around it. I think we're going to end up there eventually. It's just a case of who gets there first, platform-wise.
I would like to say, if you're a brand, then that is all very abstract and not particularly useful to you right now. But it is always important to have sort of an eye on the horizon for what these things do look like and maybe start thinking about how your brand might integrate into something like that or into a world that's focused more around AR, which is happening now, or VR, which is maybe 10 years away. How does your brand fit into that new environment? For now, keep using social media platforms to sell your products through targeted ads and small nudges towards a purchase, things like this. But I think it's important to think about that more abstract future and where your brand sits in that.
And one final point to that, which might actually be a little bit useful to brands, not in a maybe a tangible way, but more of a way that they can avoid some maybe mistakes in the way that they approach social that we've seen before. When you think about platforms in this way, when it's down to user experience and whether it can offer a new feature that no one else can offer, and that's the reason why that platform succeeds, then there is absolutely no reason why a brand should be tied to a platform and then say, oh, should we do that one? Or do you reckon that's for us? Or do you reckon this will catch on? Or we'll only do these. These are the only ones we want to do. That platform might not even be here in 5-10 years time. It might not. And we can't predict that. That is up to the platform's decisions on what they choose to do regarding user experience and whether they keep that balance right between their business model and the user experience. We can't predict that. We can see how it's going and tell you when it starts to tip over. But in terms of predicting it, that is up to the platforms and what they choose to do. But because of that, when you think about how that battle's playing out towards this, you know, this future thing that we're looking at now, I don't see a reason why we should say, oh, we're just going to do these, and oh, these new platforms that are cropping up, oh, no, we're not going to do those. They might be the ones that win. They are taking up, you know, users' time now. TikTok has taken up so much time out of people's day. And they've done that very, very successfully, very, very quickly. You know, so whether you're umming and ahhing about, you know, going on TikTok or any other new platform that might or, you know, probably will come out in the next few years when they find another, you know, content format or a way to consume more people's time, don't be afraid of going on there at all. Because, you know, Facebook didn't exist once, and MySpace and Bebo probably thought that they were the only platforms that existed. It all comes down to how they sort of navigate this battle that's constantly going on between these platforms. And your job as a brand is to connect to your audience who will be hopping between these. And so it's not a case of, you know, is this the right platform? Is this the wrong platform? You've got to go where your audience is. And that is only going to come down to who ends up continually winning this battle over user experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you can look at that by just saying diversify. Like if you add like an investment portfolio, for example, if you were listening to this, you wouldn't invest entirely within one specific niche. because, as you say, like the chances are you don't control that business's the outcome of that business. So smart investors will diversify across a number of different areas to balance out risk. So why do we not do the same with social media platforms? These are still businesses that advertising models and algorithms, that your ads are sort of a slave to those factors. Why as a brand would you not diversify and use multiple platforms and go where your audience are? Well, thanks so much for listening to this one, guys. We hope you enjoy this episode and the season. We've really enjoyed making this and we hope that it's been useful. It certainly has been for us.
The episodes are always available on your podcasting apps, so please continue to keep sharing and referring back to these podcasts.
If you have any further questions, get in touch with us on LinkedIn and let us know your thoughts. Also, if you're interested in working with Campfire on your next campaign, get in touch. Just email contact@campfire.co.uk or visit our new website, www.campfire.co.uk. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.